Welcome to Talk Commerce, the podcast where we unpack the world of e-commerce and online marketing. I'm Brent Peterson, and each week we bring you the latest insights and strategies to help your business thrive online. Talk Commerce is produced and supported by ContentBasis.io. This podcast is my creative outlet and has been going now for 3 years. We are approaching 1,000 downloads every week and growing. If you are new to this podcast, give it a listen or check out the fantastic content on our website. From exploring effective marketing tactics to dissecting the trends shaping the digital marketplace, we've got you covered, and we're here to guide you through the ever-evolving landscape of e-commerce. But we're not just here to talk, we're here to engage. Got thoughts, questions, or you want to hear a really funny joke? I'd love to hear from you. Email me at brent@talkcommerce.com and let's keep the conversation going. Ready to boost your online presence? Tune in and stay ahead of the curve with Talk Commerce. Don't forget to subscribe for the full experience and share your feedback.
You're listening to Talk Commerce. Subscribe and download at talk-commerce.com.
Welcome to this special Shop Talk episode of Talk Commerce, and I'm here with Shopware at Shop Talk. Jason Nias and Vijay Galani are here today.
Thank you for having me again. This is great.
Yeah, Jason and I are on a road trip, I think, together. He missed Hawaii.
I only got to do the work trip, so I didn't get to do the fun Hawaii trip.
Yeah, well, if you knew what I did, you would know that it wasn't that fun. Vijay, why don't you introduce yourself?
Myself, Vijay Galani, and I'm an India correspondent for the Talk Commerce, as well as I'm a co-founder and CEO for the company called Avric Solutions, where we are developing the websites using Shopware, Magento, BigCommerce. Yeah.
Nice. Good. And Jason, quick introduction.
Hey, good to see everybody again, or at least talk to them. I'm Jason Nias. I'm general manager at Shopware. And this is my second time on Talk Commerce. Longtime listeners, second time participant.
Yeah, good. So we've taken advantage of this this very luxurious space for a podcast. And I will say the last time I did this, they just had the big room. So we have a smaller big room now. It's probably a little echo going on, but that's all right. It makes it a little bit more exciting.
It's a really fun, exciting place. It's teeming with people, and it's great to be here at Shop Talk in Las Vegas.
And it is about a 3 mile walk from here to the meeting area. So it is an incredible amount of steps we'll get today.
Yes, exactly.
All right, so let's jump right into it. We've been talking a lot about the mid-market merchant, and I think one thing that we haven't talked about is the acceleration of costs as your site gets busier, as you just do more revenue, and the penalties you incur as a merchant for being successful. What do you have to say about that?
Wow, I love the setup. Well, so in, I think it was January, Shopify announced they were going to do a big price increase. And before I go into those details, I think it's a good story. I put together a board slide that talked about learnings from 2023. And, in a lot of ways, it was a really good year, but there were certainly some headwinds. And one of the learnings that we had is trying to compete against Shopify is very difficult. Their pricing strategy, their positioning, their marketing, they're in virtually every deal. We had some success head to head, but we didn't have any success taking someone off of Shopify. Not in any sort of material, repeatable, storytelling way. But what we noticed, so I put together the slide that said, don't spend a lot of time thinking about replatforming a Shopify merchant. Then January, they changed their prices. And what was really interesting about it to me was the parallel between, all the early adopters, say Uber or Lyft, or even with Netflix, how they had this unbelievably good price, a lot of value, drive tons of adoption. And it's that when you get to a certain spot that you have leverage. And you've hit a tipping point where you've got a lot of, it's hard to grow new subscribers. So the number one way you grow your business is to raise your prices, and you have leverage that you know less than that amount will leave. Well, that's the moment we're in with Shopify. And Shopify, again, one of the greatest boxes ever invented for commerce, and a lot of brands who fit in that should buy from them. But what they're now seeing is that they just saw a 30 to 40% price increase. And Shopify now, just like Disney or Netflix or others, has pricing authority to do it. And so what you're seeing in their announcement is they're going to charge additional amount for Shopify Plus for how much you pay as a percentage of your revenue. So to your point earlier, the more revenue that you do through the platform, their revenue scales at the same rate and pace the merchants does, which some people would say that's a shared success model. Others would say when you start to reach economic scale, that it becomes a tax on your business. Your success becomes theirs.
No, that's a really, really great way to put it. So in just give us an illustration in real terms. Let's first kind of define what's a mid-market merchant and what does it mean to them, to their bottom line, if they go from, say, 10 million to 100 million?
Yeah. Well, a mid-market merchant, it actually has a pretty wide and broad definition. You know, a lot of people use the revenue bands as a way to describe a mid-market merchant, but the truth is it's more about the use case and the complexity. You know, I met with a $500,000 retailer here at Shop Talk, and their online revenue is a small fraction of their overall company revenue. Well, inside of the company, that merchant has a mid-market aspect of it that's relatively small, and they're struggling to kind of get their needs met by a market. And so to me, that's a better definition of the mid-market merchant, someone who's doesn't fit inside the box of an SMB solution, or is potentially can't afford to or shouldn't afford the high-end solutions that are really built for the 1% club in the e-commerce land, you know, the Fortune 1000 type companies. So to me, that's kind of where the mid-market merchant sits.
As a merchant, the B2B portion of it, the parts that make it easy for something like Shopware or even Magento to function become more difficult in a box, right?
Yeah.
Like, just talk about $0 transactions. How easy is it that Shopware can do it, but say Shopify has a hard time doing something like that?
Well, B2B is a really fun topic to unpack. I maybe have shared this before, but I've been in e-commerce for 24 years, and every year it's going to be the year that B2B commerce really takes over, and it never has been, and there's a reason. Most commerce platforms start using the language, it's the consumerization of B2B. That's a very common phrase in our industry. But what they're really saying is we want the consumer, or we want the B2B transactions to look and feel a lot more like a consumer one from the platform perspective, because the platforms, for the most part, were built for B2C commerce. Okay, so it's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy telling B2B brands to fit inside this consumer-like box. So in a lot of ways, that's where the problem originates. And these wonderful multi-tenant cloud-only solutions really require a whole bunch of things that B2B is largely, I'll back up a bit. B2B is largely a business that's dominated by business processes defined by a company so that they can incent their sales team. They can book revenue. They can deal with the payment authorizations of lines of credits or POs. These are not things that are purpose-built for generic B2C e-commerce. They're just, by the nature of it, purpose-built for the companies to go do. And so if you're trying to solve that problem, you need to have a tool that's able to be agile and change and morph into a business process that's automated, that scales, that actually fits the way the company wants to do the business. And so the $0 transaction is a really good one. Back to the Shopify price increase. When Shopify recognizes, I believe, one man's opinion here, that they're getting to the spot where 78% of their revenue comes from basically fintech. So their relationship with payments and tax and fraud and cross-border, and they make all their money there, 78% of their revenue. And it's a meaningful piece of well that's part of the App Store revenue that they go on top. And what they're quickly realizing is the smallest percentage of their revenue actually comes from being a commerce platform. And so part of the reason they can raise their rates or want to raise their rates is to modify that percentage. That's a really dangerous game. Otherwise, they're just a payment provider and an app store. That's so that, you know, they raise their revenue to change their distribution, or excuse me, the cost. But back to your comment around B2B, you can't put a 20 basis point tax on, or excuse me, you can't make the same level of money that you make on a B2B transaction as you do a credit card B2C transaction. You just can't. No one's going to pay you 35 to 50 basis points on a $10,000 PO. Okay. Well, there are probably some companies, but most at scale won't. So what Shopify has done, because they realize they can't make a lot of money there, is they put a 18 to 20 basis points additional service fee to use their B2B commerce platform. So in addition to what you pay to use Shopify Plus, you also pay the surcharge for B2B, which will allow them to effectively monetize payments just in a little different way.
I want to come back to that, but I forgot that I forgot two things. Number one, I forgot that we were supposed to do the free joke project.
It's two in a row.
Yeah, and I didn't want to forget it this time. So I do have a joke teed up, and then I do want to get VJ's comment or feedback on this from the India perspective on B2B, what that means for consumers and what it means for customizing some of these back end things. But first, I want to tell you both a joke, and I've got a great one today. And all you have to do is say, should this joke be free? So actually, Vijay, you go first. And wow, I think we're right. We got a jet plane coming over. Vijay, you go first. Free, or should somebody pay for it? And then Jason, you'll do the same. Now, here we go. You know what really makes me throw up? A dartboard on the ceiling.
I think you should do the subscription. So at any point, if I do not like it, just cancel and have the free one.
All right. That's fair. Yeah.
That was a joke?
All right. Yes. Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Hey there. It's Brent from Talk Commerce. As an entrepreneur and podcaster, I'm always looking for ways to share my message and connect with new audiences. That's why I was thrilled when I discovered PitchDB, the ultimate tool for getting booked on podcasts, speaking gigs, and media outlets. When I first tried PitchD, I was blown away by the results. I had a 100% response rate from the opportunities I pitched, and I couldn't believe how easy it was to connect with relevant hosts and planners. With over 3 million podcast opportunities, 148,000 event planners, and 31,000 plus media outlets, and 11,000 conferences at my fingertips, I felt like I had struck gold. What I love about PitchDB is how it streamlines the entire booking process. Everything is organized in one place, and I can easily search for meaningful opportunities, directly connect with decision makers, and reach engaged audiences. The integrated portal, ready-to-use templates, and seamless functionality make pitching a breeze. If you're an entrepreneur, speaking coach, or author looking to expand your reach and make a bigger impact, I highly recommend giving PitchDB a try. Head over to pitchdb.com and see for yourself how this incredible tool can transform your booking game. Trust me, you won't be disappointed.
No,
all right, sorry. So anyway, that simple segue. So back to Vijay now. Tell us about a little bit about India and how a lot of these new platforms are being introduced.
Yeah, so like earlier, there was just, Magento and the Shopify. Those are the two platforms was popular. But now, lots of agencies are using the BigCommerce as well as Shopware. Both have their own different features and their own market. But I would say like if it is like a self-hosted or something, then people are definitely adopting the Shopware also now. And these are the platforms, like it vary between the different markets. Like you can see that now Magento is more on the enterprise level markets, where small agencies or the merchants are not able to maybe afford those one. And over there, we have the now large gap, which can be filled up by the software of big commerce also.
And from a complexity standpoint, or from just a modifying the code standpoint, I know that you're very technical. What does it look like to a merchant who wants to do anything they'd like to do? How does Shopware fit in compared to something like Shopify or BigCommerce?
I think I asked my development team to just go through the software, and they found it like very simple way you can customize it. It is easy, like whenever you wanted to upgrade the software, it is not something like you have to get the core code and still your customization will work. So, and creating a new modules, new payment gateways, those are like very good detailed training available using that training, as well as very good documentation available that is helping them to create those things easily.
Thank you. Jason, back to the B2B conversation. The penalty for a user to use B2B and the ability to generate large transactions, and then the pricing scale. Does it seem like the mid-market person or the mid-market merchant is getting left out and then being forced to go into something even bigger that may be outside of what they even need?
Yeah, well, the first thing I think we should recognize is the fact that big software has been winning for about 20 years, okay, or even longer in the context of e-commerce. Big software has transitioned everybody from a perpetual license, which was incredibly good for the brand, into a model that was a rev share, which again is really great for software companies, but it's not necessarily great for the merchant themselves. There's been a lot of economies of scale brought down to the SMB, which has been incredible for the boom in SMB-based e-commerce. And now you see some brands who are mid-market and enterprise who grew up from nothing and benefited from the ability to kind of distribute really great capabilities. Shopify is a great example. Shopware in Europe, Magento in the United States, the democratization of great tools and services to the masses, a lot of companies benefited from. But again, big software in general has the profit motive and the means to move the market the way they want to move it. And so I talked about the revenue share. That's the first and foremost. The second is cloud-only solutions. It's a shared service model, and it's great. And Shopware has a cloud as well that's also very strong. But the difference is, it's forcing people into a box. It's forcing people to look the same and act the same and feel the same and perform the same. I was at an event at Retail Summit in Minneapolis, and I was talking to this really cool brand who's running their site on a competitor commerce platform. And he got a text from one of his friends that says, "Hey, look, this company is ripping off your experience." And he's like, "No, we're just on Shopify. They're on the same template." And I thought that was really interesting. This mid-market merchant brand differentiates on the base of experience, right? I mean, it's an apparel company. A lot of similar apparel out there. These guys try to differentiate on the details. And his friends say, "There's someone who's copying you." So to me, this conversation around pricing and freedom of what the experience should look like and the ability to kind of customize to meet your business needs, this is really at the heart of what it means for the mid-market merchant and the battles they're trying to fight to get their needs met at a price they can afford and pay for it the way they want and get it hosted or managed the way they want.
Do you think that leads to a little bit of, it could lead to laziness by the merchant in terms of, I'm just going to pick the cheapest theme because I'm going to have to spend more on my apps and my transactions, and I'm going to just go with this cheap little template and I'm not going to really look and see if it's used by somebody else?
I don't know if it's laziness. Sometimes it's just around speed. You know, you can't ignore the fact that the game has changed materially. Cost of capital, the cost of labor, the cost of materials, marketing budgets have shrank, the cost of customer acquisition has raised. A lot of these things have second order effects like smaller teams or more junior people. And a lot of those scenarios really benefit those people who can really create these cookie cutter template based experiences that people, because they're in that situation and they need to go fast and hit revenue targets, create a little bit of the, you know, 1984 experience where everybody looks the same and it homogenizes e-commerce. So that's why open source is such a great place, is because it gives people the tools and the freedom to really invent what's next, not kind of fit inside of someone else's box. So I don't know if it's laziness or a byproduct of all the other factors.
Yeah, it's a really good point. We have a few minutes left. I want to give Vijay a chance to kind of chime in on what he thinks is that 2024 is going to look like. Maybe from an Eastern perspective, what do you think is the hot thing in India right now in terms of e-commerce?
I would say like a hot thing, we should use the AI, because I have seen that lots of features and lots of things in the marketplace area. I also seen that lots of technologies or the third-party solutions available, which you can integrate with the e-commerce platforms. And those are more around AI. And I have looked at the AI Copilot for the software also. It has lots of different things. If I compare with the different platforms right now in the market, then software has the highest number of AI things as compared to other e-commerce platforms. And that is something emerging in the 24, 25. So we should adapt how we can use the different things and integrate with the commerce and AI.
Yeah, and I'll just make a comment, quick comment on that, that it's, everybody sees AI as generative AI, but there's so much more that machine learning will do for a merchant than just generate content and images. And there's so many more important things that merchants should think about when looking at machine learning other than just making better product descriptions. Jason, what is your thought on this next year?
Well, we're in a,
you can't say AI.
Well, I'm going to briefly, but I'm going to move on. You know, we're in a world now. Anybody who's a merchant probably feels this more than people in my chair. But we're in this world where any new technology comes out, the hype cycle is incredible. And right now we're in AI washing bill, which means everybody's using the term to try and co-opt it and make it mean something for them so they can get credit in the market. My response to what Vijay said, thank you, Vijay. I love that you're checking out the product and really valuing some of the AI features. But what really matters is, does it change your company's behavior? Does it actually impact what you're trying to go do? There's a lot of things that are really cool and interesting and good thought exercises. But the ultimate question is, will this make you more efficient? Will you be able to apply it to your way you go to market and spend less money or need less resources or hire less consultants or something to actually make your business perform different? That's the real test. It's not, is this cool? Is it available? It's, is it, will it change our business? And I'm excited about, as we move through hype cycles, you start to get to that level of resetting of expectations.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to make one comment that I see happening, and I'll differentiate the open source model versus the SaaS-based model. And I'll also kind of differentiate the self-hosted, where you have ownership of your code, that this AI experience will allow you to integrate whatever code you want to make in as part of your core, which Shopware has done a great job of already putting into their native release a lot of AI features. But the ability to make your code work the way you want it to do by having the ability to own that code and modify that code is a big change over having to bolt on something as an app to make it work. And both Magento and Shopware also have the ability to bolt on apps and have external API connections. But I think that something a SaaS doesn't have is the code ownership, where you can take and make that code work the way you'd like it to work. And without saying names, there is one company that has fallen behind on any new features, and they've already said there will be no new features. So I don't see a lot of things happening in terms of that. So you know, this isn't the Shopware show.
No.
But there is only really one self-hosted platform that's open source that allows you to dig in and make that code yours.
I love the story, and you're absolutely right. You know, we live in a world where there's 18 commerce vendors on the Gartner Magic Quadrant. And the truth is, each one of them has an ICP or an ideal customer that they're purpose-built to go serve. And we send customers every day to high-end commerce tools or low-end to Shopify, because those are the best fits for the merchant. So I just because I'm on the show doesn't mean I only have a blinders on that we're the perfect fit for every merchant, because we're not.
That's awesome. All right. So as we close out the episode, I give everybody a chance to do a shameless plug. It means you can plug anything you want. VJ, go first. What would you like to plug today? And that's just a promotion. You can plug anything you want. Promote.
Okay, sure. So definitely, like as I mentioned that, we are a development agencies from India. So if you wanted to build anything around or anything, you need any help in terms of e-commerce, AI integrations, happy to reach out to me at vijay@averick.com and schedule a call.
Great. Thank you.
I will talk about something at Shopware. Huge surprise. Does everybody talk about their own company on their thing, or do they plug a charity?
You can plug a charity. Yeah,
I don't have a top line. I'll do the shameless plug for my company. So Shopware has a unique capability in the market, and it's called the digital sales room. And it is something that is going to do to e-commerce like telehealth has done to healthcare. And for companies who are a mid-market merchant who really value the way that their sales team owns relationships with their B2B customers, this digital sales room will actually be something the reps will want to adopt because it actually helps them make more money. It helps them serve their long tail of customers in a digital experience way, guided by strong B2B commerce capabilities, video, presentation, all in a single experience. So to me, that'd be the shameless plug. We don't see it in RFPs because nobody else has it. But when we have a chance to show it and demonstrate it, it really stands out. So digital sales room from Shopware.
That's awesome, and I'll make sure we get our show. This is in the show notes. We'll put the links in there, your contact details. Jason Nyos from Shopware, President and GM for US. Thank you so much for being here. And Vijay Golani from Evrig, co-founder of Evrig. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Talk Commerce is a production of Content Basis, LLC. For more creative content, go to contentbasis.io.